You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
Operation Trade Secret looks for intelligence on U.S. trade policy during the run-up to the Sino-American summit at Mar-a-Lago. Brickerbot is out a PDoS campaign that looks like nasty vigilante work. The Amnesia campaign is after unpatched DVRs. Sotherbot exploits unpatched WordPress instances and infects torrent users. Surveillance and influence operations allegations in the last U.S. presidential campaign have their counterparts in the current French one. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Friday, April 7th, 2017. This week, Fidelis Cybersecurity released a timely report on APT-10, a Chinese cyber espionage threat actor that's been active for some time. Fidelis is calling the campaign they've unearthed Operation Trade Secret. Like Operation Cloudhopper, another related APT-10 action being tracked by BAE and PwC, Operation Trade Secret works its way to the targets by getting through cloud and managed service providers. While most of the targets being prospected in Cloudhopper are European, for the most part UK businesses, Trade Secret is going after US organizations. The goals of both campaigns appear to be intellectual property and other economic intelligence. Trade Secret, however, seems to be taking a particularly close look at emerging U.S. trade policy, collecting against U.S. trade lobbying shops like the National Foreign Trade Council. This, of course, is timely, given the Sino-American summit now underway at Mar-a-Lago. Presidents Trump and Xi will be discussing such matters of mutual urgency as North Korean nuclear and long-range missile programs, for which U.S. patience has reached an announced end. U.S. observers and policy analysts hope they take up cooperation and confidence building in cyberspace. President Xi is said to be anxious to avert a trade war between the two large trading partners, which would explain APT-10's interest in industry groups and lobbyists. There are concerns expressed by NSA officials to Defense One that the PLA could be at work weaponizing a supercomputer for use in espionage campaigns. President Trump has so far struck an optimistic note in his remarks about the meetings, as has President Xi, but it will be worth watching whether bilateral relations in cyberspace prove amenable to diplomatic confidence building. There are signs they have in the past. A strange campaign in the wild that's being called BrickerBot is looking for insecure IoT devices and then bricking them. That is, rendering them incapable of operation. Discovered by security firm Radware when the malware began hitting honeypots on March 20th, BrickerBot is baffling because its motive is unclear. It doesn't appear to serve any obvious criminal, hacktivist, or nation-state purposes. Many observers suspect that BrickerBot is a vigilante action conducted by a gray-hat hacker who's trying to kill IoT devices before they can be herded into a botnet. As usual, vigilante action, particularly destructive action, doesn't draw rave reviews. BrickerBot is being called a PDoS as opposed to a DDoS attack, permanent denial of service, which suggests the seriousness of its effects. Two strains of BrickerBot have been observed, and both appear bent on punishing users whose IoT installations are insecure. Two other recent campaigns are worth mentioning. Palo Alto's Unit 42 reports on what they're calling Amnesia, a campaign to exploit vulnerable DVRs as bots. Amnesia is a variant of the Tsunami IoT Linux botnet reported in March of 2016. It affects unpatched DVRs manufactured by TVT Digital and related products sold by more than 70 other vendors. Its effects could be serious. Palo Alto thinks the coder behind Amnesia was trying to defeat malware analysis sandboxes, and that in some cases the malware could infect Linux servers in ways that wiped the server. Obviously, Palo Alto adds, that could be catastrophic if backups were not available. The other botnet of current interest has been around for a while, but it's becoming troublesome as it continues to find and compromise insecure WordPress sites. It's called Satherbot, and it uses torrents, those favorites of cheapskates who wish to get software without paying for it, as its vector. The criminals behind it appear to be establishing an infrastructure that could be used to sell services to other criminals on the black market. Satherbot currently contains some 20,000 devices. Security firm ESET, which is tracking and working against the campaign, advises users to protect themselves by not running executables downloaded from sources other than respected developers. ESET also warns against downloading files from sites not primarily in the legitimate file-sharing business. Taking a quick look at our CyberWire event calendar, on Wednesday, April 19th, the Cybersecurity Association of Maryland, which you may know by their acronym CAMI, has organized a program on Cyber Warrior Women, Blazing the Trail. It will meet at the Community College of Baltimore County's Center for the Arts in Catonsville, Maryland. Join them in person or online from 9:30 a.m. to noon for stories of triumph and tribulation, advice and inspiration from some of Maryland's diverse and dynamic female cybersecurity professionals. To register, you can click on the linked banner at our site, thecyberwire.com/events. CAMI notes with gratitude, by the way, the support of Exelon in making the event possible. Concerns about influence operations and allegedly improper surveillance persist in both the U.S. and now France. U.S. congressional investigations, now on hiatus during the two-week recess, which begins at close of business today, are looking into both allegations of improper surveillance and allegations of collusion with Russian influence operations. France's presidential election is being roiled a bit by both as well. The candidate of the center-right Republican Party, François Fillon, alleges that President Hollande has used police to dig up discreditable information on him, information the truth of which Fillon denies. It is perhaps noteworthy that RT, also known as Russia Today, has given the allegations prominent coverage in its French language service. News needn't be fake to be influential, or so we've heard. Joining me once again is Professor Avas Rashid. He heads up the Academic Center of Excellence in Cybersecurity Research at Lancaster University. Professor, you maintain that one of the issues we have with IoT devices is not just their vulnerability, but the fact that their actual interfaces are, in many cases, extremely limited.
Absolutely. This is a big challenge. Securing regular systems is hard as it is, and we do quite a lot of work as a wide community on that. However, users already find it very difficult to make sense of the security controls or features that are available to them on regular devices like laptops and computers, where they can have a lot of information. They also make it really hard, they also find it very hard to make sense of that information. And in the case of IoT, the problem is much harder because you do not have those traditional screen-based dissemination mechanisms that can provide additional information. A lot of the user's interaction with IoT tends to be implicit, and which leads us to really interesting challenges as to how do we convey information about security to the users, but on the other hand, how can we make it easier for them to, for example, configure these kind of IoT devices for security purposes.
So what kind of approach should we be taking?
I think there are multiple ways that this can be tackled. One issue is that of how IoT devices are designed, and they should probably be designed to be secure by default. So one of the issues that we saw in the Mirai botnet attack, which was made up of a lot of IoT devices, or at least used a lot of IoT devices amongst others, was that people hadn't changed, for example, default passwords or these kind of default settings were available. And on the one hand, it's quite easy to blame the users that they didn't change these passwords or these default settings, but equally, perhaps we can be hardening these devices before they are actually shipped. The big challenge there, of course, is this balance between usability and security. And really, I think we need more of a shift in our approach. We need to stop thinking about it in terms of usability in a traditional human-computer interaction sense, because the computers are no longer these screen-based devices that we used to use or still use quite a lot. I think we need to move from usability to a notion of some kind of security ergonomics, which basically makes it easier for the user to understand and make sense of what goes on within an IoT device and its interaction with other devices. And there are really very fundamental challenges here in terms of how we design these devices, how we convey information, but also how easy it is for a regular person in the world to configure security and manage their security and privacy in these kind of devices.
Avas Rashid, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
All this week, we've been hearing from some of the people we met at the 2017 Women in Cybersecurity Conference. My guest today is Andrea Little-Lembago. She's chief social scientist at Endgame.
I do a lot of research into the geopolitics of cybersecurity, which over the last year, as everyone knows, has been on everyone's radar much more so than it was before. So that has evolved a lot as far as the interest in it. And then I also work a lot with our data scientists, our malware researchers, our vulnerability experts, and bring together their research into something that's consumable for a larger audience.
What do you think people should know when it comes to the geopolitical world of cybersecurity at this point in time?
One is not to look at it as its own stovepipe. It's integrated into foreign policy, national security. So we need to stop looking at it as just within the cybersecurity realm. It's integrated into all the aspects of foreign policy at this point. And so we need to really look at it from that larger, more holistic view as far as how it integrates with other military operations. We've seen that over the last year integrated into certain countries' military operations. We've seen it as part of diplomatic operations. It's impacting economics. So really, it crosses the board in that area. And so that's what we're really starting to see that. And it's only going to become more and more integrated across the entire spectrum.
Is it fair to say that a certain amount of chaos has been injected into things lately?
I think the chaos has been there. I think it's becoming more visible And it's also becoming, it's escalating is the other thing that we're seeing. We just recently wrote about some of the wiper malware going on. And so you see that between Iran and Saudi Arabia, for instance. And so that those tensions have been there. Those are regional rivalries that have been going on decades, if not centuries. But what we're seeing now is more of a, some of it behind the scenes, some of it very overt as far as the destructive aspects of the their interstate relationship. And so we're seeing that in addition to some of the other aspects of their rivalry. And so it's escalating a bit more in that area. I think certain countries are becoming more adventurous in what they're doing, and they're pushing the envelope a bit more to see what can be done in this realm. At the same time, other countries are also cooperating. So we're seeing sort of this double movement of conflict in one area, but also countries moving towards cooperation and looking for ways to maintain privacy and security at the international level.
So does cyber give countries the opportunity to engage and yet still not have to drop bombs, not have to send missiles, not have to send soldiers?
Right, and that's what's going on right now, and that's some of the debate that's going on in the legal and more diplomatic global area. And so they're falling short of what the law of armed conflict. So certain behavior so far is falling short of that, but at the end of the day, it's going to be up for each country to actually define where that red line is. And so especially if it becomes integrated with other aspects, it does become actual parts of war. And so when we look at some countries actually moving their military forces into a country, they're also incorporating some cyber aspects to it, shutting out cities and so forth. And so it hasn't happened much. We've got only one or two instances of that. But so it's one of those things, now that genie's out of the bottle, mm-hmm. and it's going to be hard to put back. And so we do see more and more countries creating their versions of cyber commands, and looking at information operations, policies, and strategies, and so forth. And so it is something that is growing. It's not just something for the major powers anymore.
If you were, looking back, what would the advice that you would give a younger version of yourself, knowing what you know now, what would you tell a younger version of yourself who's just starting out?
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. That's part of the reason why I come to this conference is I talk to a lot of the younger women here and help encourage them, because we do need women to keep pursuing this field and to want to stay in it, because the mission's essential. I mean, you're getting back to the geopolitical aspect of it. This is one of the most challenging fields of our time and impactful. So the thing that probably own your experience and own your expertise. I think that women especially, even if they've gone through however many years of education, will still portray it like other people may know more in the room. And so own your expertise, be more vocal about some of those aspects of it. Do all the things, sit at the table, some of the basic things that we hear. But also you reach out and network more, and don't be afraid to do that. That's especially hard for introverts, which a lot of us in this field are. It's not natural for us to just naturally go up and talk, but networking is almost underrated. Like, everyone talks about networking and the importance of that, and I feel like they think about it that way more from like a sales or something like that, but networking is really important for just building a community, so that when you do, when you do struggle or when you do, hit some roadblocks, you've got that community to actually help build you up and help keep you within the field. And so for me now, like over the last year, one of the things I've been focusing on is expanding out and building up my network of both men and women that I know who work in various domains, industry, academics, government, so that when any of us do actually start, hit one of the challenges that we're all going to hit, and we heard that in the keynote, you have a community there to support you. And so that's really, really important. But we need to be more vocal. And that's, I wish I'd started going out speaking and writing a lot sooner. Too often the women's cybersecurity issue becomes something that is a problem for women to solve. It's also a problem for men to solve. Especially in this field, most of the executives are men. We need men at all levels to be allies, which doesn't mean just saying, okay, of course, we support diversity, we support women, and kind of stopping there. You need to actually do more than that. And being an ally can be anything from, on social media, like if you're retweeting something that someone else does as far as helping show their expertise in that area. So being a sponsor of them. If you're in meetings, all the data shows that, when women have an idea, usually it tends to be taken over by someone else and they get the credit for it. Instead of that, if you see that happening, step in and say, well, that idea that Lindsay said, she's the one who actually, and be vocal in that area and helping sponsor and promote the women. And that it doesn't mean, we're not lowering the bar, we're not expecting to be treated differently, but just help be a much more explicit sponsor in that area. And it really, it's amazing, just those little aspects like that can really go a long way to help elevate and amplify the voice of the women. And that's really what we need, because again, we're only 10%. Of the workforce. We can't do it alone. We need that 90% to also help advocate. And I think that's in many places where we've been lacking so far. But there are a lot of male allies, a lot of great male advocates. We need more.
That's Andrea Little-Limbago from Endgame.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening.